So we're just talking in the studio as we get episode 2 of Everything PC off the ground here, where we're going to be talking about Microsoft, about what Microsoft would be if it was an Afrikaans word. Mikrosach or Kleinsach.
Yes, something like that.
Doesn't really translate.
I've got some old Afrikaans customers that will probably know exactly what it is.
Yeah, so someone mail us info@techcentral.co.za. What would a direct translation of Microsoft be into Afrikaans? And that's what we're going to be talking about today in episode 2 of Everything PC, of season 2, of course, brought to you by HP and Microsoft, our sponsors for season 2. Welcome. My name is Duncan MacLeod, and I'm here with my collaborator on this venture, Gerard Pretorius. Gerard, how are you doing today?
I'm good.
Good. Well, welcome. Welcome to the studio.
Yes.
If you missed episode 1 last week, yes, we are in studio. We are no longer doing this podcast via the internet. And I think it's actually great to see you in person.
Yes.
And, glad that COVID is over.
Yes, now we can all celebrate. COVID is gone.
Absolutely. Hopefully it's gone. Yeah,
yes.
Touch wood. Anyway, episode 2, we're going to talk about Microsoft. We're going to talk about Windows, and I'm quite excited about this. I've been a Windows user. I'm trying to think now. When I first started using Windows was, I think, in 1990. So that's 32 years ago. Three decades. I started with Windows 3.0. And I think you said your first experience with Windows was
95.
Windows 95.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not too far beyond that, because it was 3.0 in 90, then 3.1, which was a huge step up on 3.0 in 1992. And then 3 years after that, it was Windows 95, which was, of course, a massive leap forward.
Massive leap, massive 95 leap was the big leap, and then small iterations, and then XP.
And then XP was the next big leap
the
forward
next
once
big
again.
One, so.
And of course, XP was very much a change of base infrastructure. It was built on top of Windows NT, and that was the end of the Windows 9X.
Yes, now NT was the actual proper replacement for the other operating systems, because 2000 was...
Windows 2000. Oh, a lot of people ran Windows 2000 on their desktops.
Yes, Windows is the tradition where when Service Pack 1 comes out, then it's working.
Yes.
Anything before Service Pack 1, it's a pretty much blah.
Yes.
Same
yes.
as Windows 11, basically.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna get into Windows 11 in some detail, and I really want to understand where Microsoft's going with Windows 11.
Yeah.
But let's look at a little bit of the history, because it's kind of fun. Speaking of history, I forgot we've got a bit of history here,
which is
in our feature. It almost slipped me. Yeah, it slipped my mind. Before we get onto anything to do with Microsoft, when this product was released, I think Windows 95 wasn't out yet. It would have been Windows 3.1 at the time.
Yes, now that would be early days.
I think cutting edge of the from Microsoft at the time was Windows 3.11 for workgroups. Remember that?
Workgroups. Yes,
Windows for workgroups.
That's all. Wow. Full circle.
When networking came to Windows for the first time. anyway, what we have here is a US Robotics 28.8. Or was it a 32.2? I think it might have been I think it was a 28.8. A US Robotics Courier dial-up modem, which back in the day connected to Telkom's copper infrastructure. Peaked out at, I think the most I ever got on this was about 21 or 22 kilobits per second. And that was on a good day when the wind was blowing in the right direction and Telkom was feeling generous.
Yes.
But a bit of history here. This came out in 1994. I bought this from Datatech at the time, Jens Montanana's company, which had just started out. I think I actually dealt with him at the time to secure this US robotics modem. It was quite pricey. I think it was about 3,000 rand in money.
Yes,
that day's money.
There were some high-end modems those days.
Quite incredible. So it's got a parallel port at the back.
Of course.
It's got two jacks. Why would it have had two jacks?
One for fax.
Oh, one for fax. Yes, this thing supported fax.
Fax, that thing amazing. That no one really does anymore. And if you do... probably for a good reason, or for legacy support.
Indeed. That's our museum piece today. It got dropped on the floor a few times, so I'm afraid I don't think it works anymore. I haven't tried to plug it in. I lost the power cord a long time ago.
Do you have the infrastructure to play with it even?
Probably.
Telkom is stripping all the copper and selling that
That's
now.
That's true. That's true. So you might struggle to find a place where you could plug this in.
Maybe if you can make your own internal net, then you can possibly make that work.
Exactly. But wonderful piece of history, this. And
we're gonna
bring in a bit of history into each episode in the season. I hope you enjoy it. Here we go. If you missed last week's episode, we had a 190 megabyte Max Tor hard drive.
Hard drive.
Weighed half a ton. It was probably connected to a mainframe at some point.
Yes.
exciting stuff. Anyway, Windows, Microsoft, more modern. Yes. Well, actually, not always more modern. There were versions of Windows older than this modem.
Built on iterations.
Yeah. Did you ever play around with the very old versions of Windows before Windows 3.1, 3.0, 2.1, 2.0, 1.0?
No, that's not something I've ever had the inkling to actually go into that old operating systems and use them and so forth.
Yeah.
And I've worked with DOS and so forth.
DOS, yeah.
When I had, I think, when was that and so forth? I think that's when I started.
Windows 95 got rid of the command line. Yes. Kind of. The command line was still there, but...
No, because DOS is basically still, I think, old financial packages and so forth, or systems and so forth.
WordPerfect and...
Yes, all that type of stuff, where it's like systems that do one thing and one thing alone, and that's it. That's what DOS did. It's like your accounting package, and that was it.
Yes. Yeah, I remember those days. I remember the DOS days. My first PC didn't run Windows, it ran DOS.
Yeah, no, it was, it was basic. Mm. That's why it didn't... It did break, but it didn't break often because there wasn't much to break.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of simplicity.
Indeed. Indeed.
Same as the old car. The old car's easy to fix.
Are you too young to remember apps like Edlin and...
Where
you would edit your config.sys file and your autoexec.bat file?
Well, no, that's even before your time. That, okay. Yeah, no, that's well
no, we, before. We used to hack those files, course. Because there was so little RAM in these computers. You had to, do we really want to load this process in autoexec.bat? Because it's going to take another 3K of RAM.
Yes, no, that's when you actually had to buffer things properly and so forth and run them properly in sequence that you can't muck it up and so forth.
Yeah.
So I do watch all of those old, the YouTube channels that do a lot of those old PCs and stuff like that from Amiga and all those things where they restore that and so forth, which I find interesting and seeing how they restore the stuff and all the complexity involved with how they actually cheated the systems to add more memory and all that jazz. I'm like, damn, that was some pretty ingenious engineering to figure stuff out with such hard limits that you had to literally think out of the box to get something done. So
no, it was the resources were very limited in those days.
Yes, no.
But and today you can run Windows 3, Windows 2, all in a web browser and emulation.
Modern day computers are so quickly now.
I think you can run Windows 95 in emulation.
Yes, yeah, no. Well, in the old days, the stuff would run so quickly you had to get a turbo button to slow it down. Don't know how that works, but nay.
Yeah, turbo slow down. Why was there a turbo button? I mean, it was always on. The turbo button was always on, and the computer was still so slow.
Yes, yeah, well, the turbo button is mainly there to actually do. You enable the turbo, from what I understand, the turbo buttons, they specifically slow the machine down so that you can run legacy hardware on the newer hardware, because a lot of those things were linked to your clock cycle.
Yeah.
So if the clock cycle increased, it actually executes quicker. So then you had to actually lock the actual clock speed down, because everything was linked to the actual clock speed of the PC.
Which was very often in those very early days linked to the clock speed of the original IBM PC, which was, can you remember the megahertz?
I can't even get the
4.7. Yeah, it's 4.77 megahertz.
I think it went down to up to 6 and so forth. 10.
I remember we had a PC at home with a turbo button. The turbo button took it from 4.77 to 10 megahertz.
Yeah.
And the speed difference was noticeable.
Yes, it's everything's linked to clock speed. Same now. We're now in the gigahertz. And then also now we've got we've got now more advanced tech where we actually have prefetchers and schedulers that can actually schedule tasks properly. That was literally running in a clock, hence why it's a clock cycle. It run at time, at that point, there we go. And you had to get it at the same beat. If you missed a beat, you had to flush everything, restart the whole thing. Oh, my word.
Anyway, let's get more modern. Let's talk about Windows as it is today. A lot of people thought Windows 10 was going to be the final point release of Windows, that it was simply going to become Windows as a service
or something.
Windows 365 or simply just Windows. And then I think Microsoft surprised everybody last year when they announced they were going to release Windows 11. That kind of came out of the blue, didn't it?
Yes. Well, it was a good push, because it was basically, I think, the main thing came from they had so much focus on corporate, because their main focus for Microsoft, and I still think largely, is corporate. It's all government stuff. It's Office 365. That's their main focus.
Yep.
And that was their focus before that. So they kind of abandoned Windows in some sort where they can just like, Windows is the thing that sold Office. That's the key thing. So we could sell it to companies and then that's, you need, you have Windows to use Office, and the main Office app that everyone uses is Outlook.
Mm.
So that's how you get there. So I think Windows, because they also changed CEOs, and I think there was no real push because it, Windows wasn't a money maker.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to look at a business point, how do you justify Windows when it doesn't really bring you money in that sense? So then now that Apple started to push and push their own ecosystem, as Apple got more and more popular, I think that's probably when Windows started to realize, okay, we need to be careful now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can get a point, because we sell Office on Apple.
Mm.
That's the only way you can cheat the system if you don't want to run Windows, is you can run Mac, and Mac has has an Office version on it. So you can still see some corporate companies and government companies have gone and say, we use Apple, and then that's how they use that. So if, because that now gives Apple the advantage of the store.
Mm.
So then iTunes, all those type of things, where they can make more money. So that's what you'll see now with Windows doing a big push with Microsoft, the operating system, purely to push also their store as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can get people to buy from the store and all that type of things. So I think that's where that came from, where somebody actually woke up and say, if we leave this to Apple, they're going to take it on a run.
Mm.
So that's where that comes from. And I think Windows's big problem was the hardware was also not innovating quickly enough.
Mm-hmm. Which is why they dirty their own hardware, to try and force the industry forward, right?
Yeah, well, Apple has that, where they completely just gave up. Microsoft isn't as much as a hardware company as Apple is, because Apple's a way bigger hardware manufacturer than as Microsoft. Yeah, Microsoft's big hardware is, yes, they've got like the Slate and all those things, but they're much smaller projects. The only real big project they have is Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Is their big, we make multiple millions of units that we need to mass produce and so forth and push and deliver and execute and all those type of things. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if they learned in there as well a lot of how they can optimize hardware and so forth. Because, again, Xbox, with the actual focus of that, is still running a Windows kernel that's very stripped out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's stripped out of all the unnecessary bits and so forth. That's why you can't just install a Windows application into Xbox and it works. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work for them like that. So that's where that came in.
Has Microsoft got Mac envy? Because I often feel that there is some element of that going on. I mean, why would they launch their own hardware? Why would they try and compete in that? I mean, Microsoft has always had a very different focus to Apple. Apple has been an integrated walled garden in which you buy a piece of hardware that's tightly married to the software, and it's worked incredibly well for Apple, but it has left them with maybe 10% market share, whereas Microsoft owns 80-90% of the market with Windows, and it's worked pretty well for them, working this model of partners like Dell and Lenovo and HP, et cetera, et cetera. It's allowed them to dominate the PC market, but here they are building their own hardware now. They say it's kind of to give the rest of the industry ideas about what you can do with the PC. Yeah. But is it not just a case of Microsoft seeing what Apple's doing and saying, "Oh, we really like that. Actually, we'd like to copy their model, but we can't really do it."
It's a difficult one to say for Microsoft. That's what where Microsoft needs to actually come out and say, "Are they going to be dedicated into hardware?" Because a lot of times Microsoft does great things in hardware, but then it's only them that do it, and they don't really internally push it.
Mm-hmm.
They fall into that same pit that Google does sometimes, where they make a product and then they just it becomes abandoned.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah.
So Apple's the reason why Apple has a focus for that is because their operating system is linked to their hardware. So that comes from Jobs, that his original idea is that let's cut straight to the metal.
Mm.
That's their main focus, is our operating system is tuned for our hardware. Microsoft went to the route, especially due to Bill Gates, because in those early days, it would be much more difficult for Microsoft to come into those days to try and compete with Dell, HP, and IBM in those days and compete with them.
Mm-hmm.
They would be killed immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now it's much easier due to now with China having more manufacturing, there's more competition there. It's easier now for you as a vendor to go to X Chinese company and ask them, we would like to make a laptop chassis and so forth. again, you get now companies dedicated to make laptops for third. That's why you see more third-party laptops companies coming out.
So it's become easier for Microsoft. Do you think they regret that early approach? Do you think that they would actually, do you think Gates and Ballmer after him would have actually preferred to have followed the Apple model?
No, I think what the essential idea was, they would wanted a better, the OEM markets to be better at innovation. Because Microsoft was mainly saying, we are a software company. That is our thing.
Yes.
We do software.
Yeah.
You do hardware. You do hardware well. So instead of trying to be this massive giant that's trying to do everything at the same time, because generally what happens with companies that get too big is they start to fall into that. You can say Intel and IBM fell into that problem. Intel's probably now getting into its late terms for that, where that's now, well, normally I explain this like Babylon Tower syndrome that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got so many different people working in your company and so many different divisions that some parts of your company speak a completely different language than the other one. And then that's how then miscommunication happens and all those things. Where if you can try and focus the company down to one thing and do one thing good, there you go. Now with Apple, the advantage, because they're now being so affluent and have a lot of money behind them, they can do that. And they've been managing that properly as well. Mm-hmm. So they have the proper right people in place to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say they've been always good at hardware, because you can see sometimes with hardware failures and the keyboard muck-ups they've made and all that type of stuff.
Butterfly keyboard particularly.
Yes, so they have made amateur mistakes compared to other brands.
Yeah.
If you go look HP and Dell, HP Envy, not as if they don't make stuff that's go faulty, but compared to like the embarrassing things that Apple have done, it seems that Apple's not always as good at the hardware compared to other companies are.
Yeah.
So that you can still see Apple's still more focused to be a software company. So I think in the early days with Bill Gates, his focus was there. I think if Bill Gates was in charge later on and he stayed on later and so forth, I think he would have done a bigger push and used Microsoft money to get a team for hardware.
Right.
Because that's what they did with, that was their main fear with Sony.
Mm-hmm.
When Sony did the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell people, normally what you can do is, I think Xbox has their own documentary about Xbox, which is very informative in terms of where Xbox came from. And I think it would be beneficial for Microsoft to actually start doing that, take the philosophy that they've learned with Xbox and actually do that with other hardware as well. Because they do have a good hardware team there that can do that. I would, if I was now kind of be in a position of power there, I would say learn from those divisions and actually get that division to more bleed out into other segments and say, sweet, take these guys that know how to make consoles and all those things. Move that into more areas. Make more different versions of Windows.
The one thing that has surprised me now that you mentioned that is that, you know, they've developed some of that Surface hardware is really nice. The Surface Books, that all in one machine that they built was beautiful. But one thing that surprises me, especially given their legacy in the gaming space through Xbox, is they haven't launched a PC gaming hardware brand.
I think the main problem there is, I think they might get into that, but the problem is there is, you want an Xbox has, you've got the Xbox brand already.
Yeah.
So they can either expand on that, which I would recommend.
Yeah, sure.
That's what I would push and say, make an Xbox that runs more Windows
Xbox
and so forth.
PC.
My problem is now, when they get to that point, I think a lot of the OEM vendors are going to get a bit irated with that.
Right.
Because they're going to say, now you're coming into our market.
Into our lucrative high-end market.
Now the problem is, Microsoft already has the government looking at them. Because again, even Bill Gates and all those things, they're going to look at them much more frowny upon them than actual Apple. Apple owns their own ecosystem.
Mm.
So they don't see Apple's, normally with regulators and so forth, they don't see Apple. Apple has this advantage where people see them as a different company.
Yeah.
And which is a bit unfair, because if Microsoft tried to do what Apple's doing, they would be actually like scathed and like people will rive against them.
Mm-hmm.
But if Apple does it, it's fine.
Mm.
So there's this double standards between the two companies. So that's why Microsoft needs to walk that line very carefully because they don't have that same liberty as Apple where they can just do that. Because if they do that, then Dell can just say, okay, sweet, we'll start using Linux.
Mm.
Screw you. And then Microsoft...
Will they do that though? I mean, users are so used to Windows. Linux could be a big shift for them.
But now that would be...
But it could
that
could
would annoy push them. That would push the OEMs to say, sweet, we've seen now, that's the advantage. We've now seen Valve.
Yeah.
They've pushed their own operating system. Not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me that if Steam can do it, doesn't mean that HP and Dell and Lenovo can't say, hey, let's team up and let's make our own operating system because Windows is going to squeeze us out.
Mm.
So they have to make a way to survive. So Microsoft needs to walk a very fine line between that. Because if they push them too hard, then they're going to go away. That's the reason why Microsoft is so prevalent with everything.
Yeah.
It's because Microsoft isn't, they're not changing or trying to change the rules that are in place already.
So do you think they deliberately don't have their foot on the gas as hard as they could with the Surface lineup? They could be doing more. They could have bigger market share, but they deliberately are avoiding annoying their OEM partners.
Yes. No, you can clearly see this from it. I can understand. I can sympathize with it. Mm. But I would want them. Intel also does this where they make their own laptops and so forth purely as a, like, this is what you can do, which is.
And it has helped drive the market forward because if you look at, I mean, turns into a tablet, doesn't it? This machine you're using
now. It's a 360.
That's something that Microsoft really pushed originally with and a lot of that integration had to happen at the software at the Windows level. And if they didn't have their own hardware, perhaps they wouldn't have been incentivized to do it.
I would suggest there's more, I would hope more, then the companies need to actually really start talking more with one another. There is a problem with that because each company becomes. You can see they've got their own, like, we want to do it this way. That company wants it as a, again, advantage to Apple. They don't have that internal struggle. They just do it. If the head guy says this happens, it happens. That's it. Mm. So is the difference between democratized PC industry or the normal now dictatorship of Mac, where there is the one way and there is the only way. So that's the difference. So that's why PC industry has a bit of a weirder trend with that because it's democratized in that sense.
Microsoft has a side. Kind of walking a fine line here, isn't it?
Yeah, they have to.
We don't want to avoid the. We don't want to pee off our OEM partners too much, but we also kind of like what Apple's able to do with this tight integration between hardware and software.
Software, yeah. So that's why you'll see now with now as we now come with Windows 11 and why Windows 11 was now so important and a big step is
why it exists at all.
Well, Windows 11 main thing is I think there's two main reasons why that happened. First of all, hardware acceleration that's coming in. Hardware acceleration is more and more important now, and you need newer operating systems to take advantage of. Apple does this as well. That's why Apple laptops fuel so quickly, and that's why they get old so quickly.
There was a lot of controversy around Microsoft doing that with Windows 11 because you had to meet certain security requirements before you could switch, which I think they've now dropped, by the way.
No, I don't think they're still going for that.
Partially dropped.
Well, as far as I go, Intel and AMD said straight for Windows 11, the only things that both of those companies support, because both of those, Microsoft actually went and spoke to AMD and Intel. This is not just a Windows, we force this upon you. They actually went to all the hardware vendors and saying, we need to get to a point where we can't expect HP and Dell to keep on supporting a laptop that's 15 years old. That is unrealistic. And it's fair. I know a lot of people's like, it sucks because again, you look at two ways. Do you want to buy a product and keep it forever? Or do you want to change a product every 3 years? Most of the companies prefer you change it every three years.
Of course, 3 years.
That's why Dell and HP, all of their warranties is 3 years.
Yeah.
Apple says...
Apple does the same. Apple,
if you don't buy the Apple Care, it's 1 year.
Yeah.
They want you to buy every year a new phone. That's why they launch a new phone every year, because they want you to buy everything 1 year. That's why they make so much money. It's because people buy and they buckle into that trend and they buy it every once a year, which is bad, but... It worked for Apple.
Their latest OS, which is coming out in September or October of this year, they're killing off support for machines. They're actually quite recent.
Yeah. But that has to happen, especially with Apple. Once they have their own silicon as well, they're going to learn that it's going to be more difficult.
They're killing off those Intel machines very rapidly.
Yeah. Because again, it's like you've got your dev team. You only have so many people that you can employ to do that, and you only have so many masters that can do programming languages and all that hardware level type of stuff. And acceleration is the main key point.
Yeah.
So I think Windows went to AMD and Intel and asked them, okay, you're the guys that control the PC industry for CPUs. So what do you want to do? So I think AMD said Zen 2 and up. Intel said 8th gen and up. Mm-hmm. Now, there's some other reasons why Intel would have gone that route, because Intel had big security problems with their chips, which are built in. So does AMD as well, with Spectre and Meltdown and all those type of things, which are literal hardware vulnerabilities.
Were those fixed from Gen 8 onwards?
Some of it. There is way less problems with 8th gen and up.
Okay.
So the other ones before that have big security problems.
Flaws,
and when you enable those security protections through software, by my performance, 20-30% performance loss. I know my server guys wept because some of them literally overnight lost 30% of your performance in server. So you've got a data center and you lost 30% overnight. Literally, some companies in panic bought more Intel chips because now all of a sudden you've lost 30% of your performance and you have to make it up now for all your customers. That's now demand's going up. Mm. Now you have to buy even more CPUs to keep up with that upward trend. So you can see that when if you look at the Intel financials and so forth, when those years came in, when that vulnerability kicked in, you could see the data center actually spiking in profits because all of a sudden these guys
they profited buying. From their own mess.
Now the problem is now Intel is in that position where legally there might be some issues later on. So that's why there's a good way for now to out to that and say, okay, Windows 11, no more support for the old chips. Great.
Mm.
Now we don't have to officially support it. So if you get hacked or something like that and you're not using something that's supported, you can't sue us. So that's a good out. And it's also an advantage for Intel, for AMD and Intel, because now they can say, sweet developers, you are making a game, you're making this. You can guarantee you have AVX2 is now in the standard now.
Yeah, yeah.
So whereas previously AVX2 isn't the standard because you can have old chips that they have AVX1 or don't even have AVX2. So a lot of the game developers are kind of nerfed by that because they now have to now literally compile the game in a different standard so that they can develop for most of the people that's on that platform. So it's a good thing for sometimes to, same as in nature, where you burn everything and regrow everything. This is the burn moment.
Now talk to me about this other security chip requirement that Windows 11 introduced for something called, I think, the Trusted Computing
TPM.
Module, TPM. Yeah. TPM, TCM.
Yeah. No, TPM.
TPM, what does it stand for? Trusted?
Platform Manager.
Platform Manager or Module.
Module,
like
yeah, it's module.
Module.
It's module. Yeah,
module. And that required version 1.2 or 2.0,
yes.
I forget the detail.
It's basically 1.2 and so forth. Normally higher. I tell people...
What is this thing,
first of all? The TPM module thing is a... For especially for BitLocker,
right.
For security encryption and so forth, the encryption key is actually holding on the actual
security. So that's the thing that encrypts your hard drive?
Not necessarily. That's the thing that has the key.
Oh, that has the key that does the job.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you, let's say you enable BitLocker on your machine and I take your hard drive or SSD out of your machine, I plug it in the machine, it's going to tell me, yeah, what's your BitLocker code?
Okay.
One massive code that you need to put in and then you have to put the password in and then you can get access.
And this needs that module to work.
Ideally, for the perfect security, you need that module. You can. There's other ways you can enable it, but that's all software stuff that can be broken. You can literally brute force those things. This, you can technically still brute force, but you will need to be worth a lot of money. This is like government level. Like
NSA stuff.
We are spending a couple of $100 million to try and get into your machine because the hardware requirements are stupid to get, and it's still going to take you 3 years to hack it.
So is this a good thing or a bad thing about Microsoft to enforce this requirement?
Well, I think it's a main enforcement due to because Microsoft has such a big impact in business.
Right.
It's very important for business, especially now with Poppy Acts and all those type of things. Mm-hmm. It's now a requirement for companies to actually enable BitLocker onto their machines.
Okay.
So I tell people now, with its European Union, our South African Poppy Act also states that if you're keeping customers' information on your device, it needs to be BitLocker. Mm-hmm. It needs to be secure. Mm-hmm. So if somebody steals that thing, they have to put a password in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because even now, I tell people, for Windows 7 and before that, my IT guys, they could hack it. Even if you've got a Microsoft password and everything, they could hack it.
Mm.
It's very easy to get, like, you give it to him 15 minutes later,
just open. Plug it into another computer and copy it off.
No, it's not even copy it off. Mm. You could literally just hack your operator. You can just bypass the password.
Okay.
That's how easy it was for my guys. So we had customers come in, it's like, oh, then bring it in a second, then the customer has like a really long password or something like that. Jeremy just hacks the thing, gets past it. Okay, put the password back. So how did you get in my machine? It's like, we just cracked it and hacked through it. So that's how easy it was with Windows 7 to get in your machine. Right. Windows 10 is still fairly easy if you just have a password.
Yeah.
Once you actually have a Microsoft account, then you're screwed. I tell people, it's like, I presume there is ways around it and so forth, but that's way more advanced and so forth. So the amount of difficulty that goes up, again, you will never make it impossible.
Mm.
You just need to increase the difficulty and the amount of money required to do that job. Mm. That's where Microsoft...
But if you've got a TPM module
TPM
with
module,
BitLocker enabled, you have to be an NSA hacker to get into it, basically.
Yes, no, the amount of difficulty then has gone up through the roof.
Right.
So I tell people that it's a good thing. So the TPM thing was a bit of a debacle because a lot of customers went out and said, oh, we need to buy TPM modules. I'm like, relax. With 8th generation up, the TPM module is built into the actual Intel chip.
It's just not necessarily switched on.
Yes, because that was not mandated.
Right.
It is now mandated, now with the latest BIOS updates and from Asus, Gigabyte, MSI, Ace, whichever brand and so forth. For laptops, it's been enabled from a long time already.
Mm-hmm.
It's been enabled since Windows 10.
So in most cases, all you need to do is was install the latest firmware for your motherboard, and it would if, assuming you had the, yeah, the module
so,
in there.
So with most of the brands, it was Intel is probably the more difficult one because Intel has a different name for their TPM. So AMD at least calls theirs
a TPM.
FTM, so firmware-based TPM.
Right.
Intel calls theirs PPT. So now, I can understand why. It's because it's their own implementation of TPM.
Right.
So technically, and again, that comes from the legacy stuff because Intel's been doing this for decades now.
Yeah,
so it's not the first time they've done the security chip and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just more advancements in those security fields. And again, it's a happy accident, can we say, that Windows 11 is mainly there purely to move the whole industry onto new hardware. So that, especially for software developers, so they can say, sweet, here's the new board line.
Mm.
We can now actually make stuff standard with AVX2, with the newer SSE encoding and so forth. So instead of trying to support that massive, because you can get to a point where, especially with the software developers, when they look at, that's my biggest problem with NVIDIA, with the 1060 series.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the developers try and code for the 1060, but it's fundamentally crap hardware. That's why DirectX 12 took so long to implement, because the 10 series cards sucked with DirectX 12. Like, terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So that then means that the software sucks as well, because now the hardware doesn't really work with the software.
Mm.
So you see how that now knock-on effect gets in.
So this really is an attempt by Microsoft to drag the whole industry forward.
It is. Modernizing. It is a proper burn and regrowth.
Mm-hmm.
Now from which Windows 11, which is needed. At some point, we need to say, it's done.
Let go of the legacy.
It is now. It is time to. It's time for it to die.
Yeah.
Everything now needs to die at some point.
Yeah.
And that's now for legacy stuff. It's now, and again, it's only 2025. So it's not as if it's like now.
Yeah.
It's still a couple of years away before it happens.
And if you happen to have older hardware and you're a consumer, not a business probably wouldn't want to do this. But if you've got some older hardware that you really want to run Windows 11 on, you can get around the.
You can and so forth. But I tell people, it's like, really, what if you've got that old hardware? What is Windows 11 doing? What Windows 10 can't?
Nothing.
That's now the main problem.
Yeah.
So it's only really the new hardware that actually benefits from Windows 11.
It's got some DirectX improvements.
Well, the problem is if you've got that old hardware, it probably doesn't even support that stuff. So I'm like, you see now, that's the chicken egg. And if your hardware is that old, I tell people, at some point your hardware gets so old where you can buy the new i3, and the new i3 will be way quicker than the old i7.
Yeah.
So at what point do you say, okay, I can build a machine, even my office, decent office gaming or office machines, professional office machines, are like 9,000 Rand, including Windows.
Yeah.
So if you've got legacy hardware and so forth, how much is it going to cost in power to run?
Yeah.
Even now, my server guys, I've spoken to them, so they're busy killing off anything that's on Intel 14 nanometer.
Mm.
Because literally running it for a year costs more power than buying new power.
That's hilarious.
Especially for European countries where the electricity costs is now skyrocketing.
Well, this country too.
So I tell people, it's like, now you can see, it's like, if you take that machine that uses 90 watts or something like that the whole time, a modern day machine might only use 10 watts.
Yeah.
Over a year, and if you've got it on for 24 hours, literally in a couple of months, you can literally buy the new hardware for cheaper and saving the electricity bill.
Yeah.
And the heating bill and all those things.
And if you do insist on running the old hardware, Windows 10 is still supported and it's actually a good OS.
Yes, Windows 10 is still there. It's still there till 2025. So I tell people, it's not as if it's like an urgent thing. So I think a lot of people went for clickbait and just like, oh, clickbait. And then a lot of people went just for, people like being angry at the internet. That's just a fact. People like throwing stuff around and all that jazz. So that we'll just need to accept
controversy for the sake of controversy at the end of the day.
Unfortunately, I think Windows' big failure there was communication. They did screw that up magnificently. So it's one of those things where it's like, yo, guys, you should have learned from your previous mistakes and say, if you communicate with something, and most businesses still struggle with this, and I presume that struggle comes from most of the guys that are there are probably engineers or guys that are not social aware. And you get onto that trap where you know how it works, but explaining it to someone else might be very difficult.
Mm.
And then you have the inbuilt assumptions that you don't think about.
Mm.
That's where some advantages to lawyers, to get sometimes lawyers in, is to actually get stuff in layman's terms.
Mm.
Sit through with them and actually think it through.
The funny thing is, Microsoft does employ a number of technical marketing people.
But the problem is sometimes them talking to the actual specialist is sometimes a, like, discomfort disjointment there.
Yeah.
where the technical guys can't explain it properly. That's why they need more. That's why you need people like Lisa Su and so forth. You need someone that's very proficient in that skill, but they're also proficient in the social skills as well.
Yeah, and so that's a rare skill, actually.
That is, especially in the tech industry, very rare. Mm. That's why they get in high positions very quickly. Mm. Steve Jobs, all of those guys might not be the best engineers or something like that, but they're the best compromise between the two.
Yeah,
where they can say, I know enough about the hardware to actually understand fundamentally how it works, but I've got enough experience of seeing how it is, and they know what people employ. So that is major Windows 11's biggest problem, was its debut marketing was just done completely wrong.
Yeah, you're right.
Failed.
So let's talk a bit about Windows 11 itself, and let's start with the interface, because it was a bit controversial. They defaulted to this centered task. I've forgotten what they call this thing. It's not a dock. It's the task tray, task bar.
Task manager. Task manager. It's task bar.
Task bar. They centered the apps. Now, that was clearly copying the Mac. They don't have the fancy animation when you move your mouse over it.
Actually, funny enough, the middle thing is mainly for bigger screens.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're running bigger screens, it's actually easier to get to the... Because the thing is, it's one of those things where they've done research and so forth. If you've got a big screen to get to the task... If you need to go to the far left-hand corner, it takes much longer than just going right down. Ideally, what they want, Microsoft wants people to do is, depending on your mouse, they don't want you to actually use that anymore. They want you to use the Windows key.
Yeah.
This is one area where I would also prefer Microsoft to push more education in how to use your operating system
shortcuts
more efficiently. Not necessarily shortcuts, but just, did you know that in Windows you can do these things? Because a lot of people don't know that you can just... Click on the Windows button. If you want control panel, you can just type in control panel and press enter.
Yeah.
You don't need to go look for it. Windows 7, a lot of people was like, especially when Windows 10 came out, a lot of customers came, or even Windows 8, I would say.
Mm.
A lot of people had to say, oh, no, it's for touch and it's for this. And I'm like, but have you even tried to actually just see how they thought you should use it? Now, there is two ways you can look at it. You can look at it arrogantly, saying you shouldn't force people to use it on that way. So that makes it very difficult.
So Gerard, while we're talking about the new interface on Windows 11, I want to talk as well. It's a little bit controversial is how they've changed the start menu. I actually think it looks a bit like a Linux, more of a Linux sort of environment.
Linux, Mac, you can say it's mainly from the Mac and so forth, where they got that from. Because the main reason for the taskbar being now in the centered manner is mainly for big screens and for tablets and so forth, having it centered. So it's easier to get there from your mouse cursor.
It makes sense because people are using much bigger monitors today than they were when did they introduce the start button? It was in Windows 95.
Yeah. Windows 95 was the original start button. Well, technically you can say before that, because even Mac had old ways where you can top left-hand corner where you can click and then there you go. So that conceptual menu was like that.
Yeah.
The thing is, I think we're moving away from that conceptual menus and so forth systems, because everything is more, because more, especially the younger generations are getting used to phones, where everything is a touch. You press the start button, it's the same as your home button on your phone. You open that and it brings up a block and you choose your thing for quick access. So you can see all these companies are doing the same thing because the younger generation is used to that. They're not used to the old generation where Windows 7, click start, click programs, add feature or something like that. You have to go click, 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 million clicks to get to something where now with Windows, ideally you just press the Windows button, you type in the thing that you're looking for and you press enter. There you go.
Yeah.
Some people are not used to that type of stuff still, especially my old customers are like, oh, I didn't even think you could do that.
Yeah.
So that's where it comes in.
Yeah, and they put all the icons at the bottom in pop up. You can obviously switch those around, put your own icons, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. I see exactly what you're saying. It's more like a phone type of interface. Yes. One thing I wish they would actually allow you to do, and they don't in Windows 11, I even wished it was there in Windows 10, was the option to remove the start button, the Windows button. You don't need it. I don't use it at all
when I'm using a Windows machine. You can't just hide the taskbar. I think the start
button... But I use the taskbar because I keep all my apps in the taskbar.
So I think the taskbar is mainly there for administrative reasons. So
you mean the Windows button is there for...
Yes, so because you can right-click on it and then you get the conceptual for if you want it done now, go in for task manager, system, devices. But they could easily do
shortcut on the keyboard to bring up those
options. But it's also now if you do remote support. Then it's a bit more difficult.
True.
You see, so I think it's there purely for system integration. Again,
no, I think it's also there because users know to click on start.
Now, you still do that. You can argue point, you can disable it or something, or hide it. Again,
same with desktop icons. I wish you could, but you can't.
So I think that's maybe something that if enough people moan about, they can probably change it. But I think there's no real push to get it off, because it's like, it's there. You can hide the taskbar if you don't like seeing it all the time. So it's one of those, it depends on the person.
I'm probably a minority audience here who wants to get rid of the start menu.
Exactly. Again, you at priority of Microsoft, removing start button is right probably very low on the list there. There's more important things to fix than the start button.
Yeah. So when this episode of the podcast comes out, so there's going to be a major update, probably have already been released. I think it's scheduled for the September the 20th.
Yes.
And this podcast is probably going to come out some point after September the 20th. And that's the 22H2. They really need to come up with better naming for this.
Well, it's very engineering. I prefer that, because even our technical staff prefer it, because then we can always just go Windows Vir, and then you can see what version is 21H1. Okay. Yeah. We can see how outdated this system is. Immediately,
the market is definitely didn't get involved in this naming.
No, but again, it's most people don't need to worry about that.
No.
This is more for administrators, people that need to IT systems and so forth. So for them, it's easy. We can literally look at a glance and say, okay, this customer is very out of date. Install in the operating system, because maybe that's the reason why the thing broke or something like that. We do that a lot with our customers. When people bring machines into it, we will actually inform them saying your machine is out of date, because the way that Microsoft now schedules their updates is much more frequently now.
Yeah.
Where they try and say, tell you, you need to update within X amount of quarters. And then a lot of customers then, if you hold all those updates and then it does all those updates at the same time, that tends to break something in the window. So generally when people bring stuff to our shop to fix, we generally tell people, that's the first thing we do, is update the Windows to the latest version so that we can prevent stuff. Prevention is always better than cure. It's easy to just leave it, the thing breaks, and the customer needs to bring it back to me, and now we have to fix it again.
I have to ask this question, and you deal with a lot of end users. Why are end users so reluctant to update their software? I've seen people, non-technical users, running Windows, and I've watched this. Yes. A message pops up in the bottom right, and it says, there are updates to install for your operating system, and the user goes, go away, close. And they never install the software.
Yeah. No, that is a big problem. I think there should be better ways to manage that. I think you can say force it, but then a lot of people hate when you try and force something on them.
Yeah,
this is now also a big problem with the current generation. They don't like being told when to do what. That is a big problem, because
it's this massive security flaw, and it's opening up their computers to risk, but they don't want to update.
Yeah, that the inconvenience is too great. That's the problem. And again, it might be a minor inconvenience. So I would prefer Windows having a better way to actually inform and educate customers and saying, making it a bit easier.
Yeah.
Where it's when you do, that's why with Windows 11 also changes the way it does updates.
Mm-hmm.
When with Windows 10, when we first, the back end is starting to be more modular. So now Windows 11 takes that even further, makes it even more modular. So now when they do an update, they don't need to update the whole system. Because this is very similar to how video games are updated, especially with the consoles. When you have a game update and it might be 100 megs, you have to download the whole stupid infrastructure for to apply that update. So just to do 100 megs, you have to download a gig or 2 gigs. It depends on the program and so forth, which is also data intensive, because again, Microsoft pays for the data going out. Not as if it's free. So imagine the amount of cost saving they can do if they can cut the updates that they need to be pushed. So again, you need to remember from their point of view as well, that costs money. So now with Windows 11, now that they've gone to the cluster, it will make updates much quicker. And you can see that. If you use Windows updates and you download the Windows updates, they're way quicker than Windows 10. Like, shockingly quick. And especially if you've got newer hardware that's better at doing it and so forth, it's literally, the main problem still, I think, is reboots and so forth, because people are so afraid that they've got so many bookmarks and so forth open in Chrome or in Edge or something like that, so they're going to lose that and so forth. So if they can have better education saying, no, it can close, don't worry, it won't lose all your stuff and so forth. So
I think it's more irritation than anything else.
The inconvenience. People don't like being inconvenienced anymore. They get very irated and very angry very quickly. Especially now, COVID also made
You're probably like me, though. Every couple of days I go into Windows Update, check for updates.
Yeah, no, I do that. Normally I tell people, I would prefer Microsoft having a bigger thing saying, okay, guys, from now on, we're going to do all major updates every Tuesday, which they are doing. That's what's called Patch Tuesday. For us, it's more like Wednesday and so forth, depending on time zones and all that type of jazz.
Yeah.
But I would prefer them to having a more hardcore schedule saying, okay, this is the schedule. We're going to have 2 days that we're going to do updates. That makes it more easier for system administrator. Yeah. Because again, most of our complaints for this also comes from normal end users. Because normally most of the updates, especially for the big manufacturer, or not, let's say the big companies, let's say Coca-Cola and all those guys, they have administrators that do the updates for you.
Mm-hmm.
That then lock your machine, it does updates, whether you say so or not. So there you don't really get that argument. It's mainly the argument from gamers and more casual users that use Windows that complain about that. Which I would prefer them to have a better execution in terms of telling people this is when the update is coming, or actually pop up and saying there's an update coming. Please note, schedule a time where you're going to restart your machine for that update. Mm. So that's why you see that thing where Windows says just leave the machine on as well. Again, because most machines are going to SSDs as well, we don't really need to shut stuff down anymore. Shutting down really doesn't do anything anymore, actually. Restart does something. Shutdown is basically the same as a glorified sleep. It's just more inefficient, though, because now it needs to wake all the processes and give them power and all that jazz. So
good point.
There needs to be better education on that to say shutdown isn't as important anymore. Because a lot of people still come in and I tell them, you've got an SSD, you can just close the lid now.
Yeah.
Oh, but shouldn't I shut it down? It's like, no. There's no moving parts anymore.
Mm.
You can just shut it down, put them in your bag, and there you go.
Yeah.
In the old days, you had to shut it down, wait for the hard drive to shut down before you... Because you don't want to throw a laptop in there while the disk is spinning, and then conk, there goes the disk, goodbye. Mm. So there should be better implementation around that and education around that machine for Windows.
But let's talk about 22H2. It'll probably have just been released when this episode goes out. But what are we expecting? It's quite a big update, you say.
Yeah, it is a big update because there's a lot of backend stuff that they're changing again. The main features that most of our clients will probably use to is like Task Manager will have a black mode, which is nice for more IT guys like us and so forth. They'll now be implementing auto HDR. We'll have a better implementation. In my opinion, that's so far the best implementation is HDR. Mm-hmm. Windows 11 HDR is way better than Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Mac, it's like you can't even compare the two. So that's also quite nice, especially for gaming and so forth, where you can enable the auto HDR if your car and your screen supports HDR. So that's
so you don't have problem to switch HDR on explicitly,
you can leave it on, but it's also they now have a hotkey for HDR, which is Control Windows B.
Nice.
So you can just toggle it immediately and you can switch
it on. Oh, that's nice. I didn't know that. What is it? Control?
Control Alt B, I think.
Control Alt B. Okay.
I think this laptop supports it and so forth. Mm-hmm. Or is it?
That's okay. I'll Google.
It's Windows Alt B.
Windows Alt B.
Yeah, Windows Alt B is the hotkey for that. And you can also enable, you can also go through that through the game bar as well, which is Windows G.
Yeah.
There you can also now have, that's also a feature that a lot of people don't know about. That I had cut up some customers complained about. It's like, I want to change my audio device quicker. Windows G, it's right there. You can just change it right there and you can see what output device you want to use.
Very nice.
So I tell people, it's like, and again, it's education.
Yeah.
I had to figure this out by myself. Microsoft didn't teach me this.
Mm.
And that's the big problem, Microsoft, is they need to actually, they're starting to do this with Office.
Mm.
So I'll give them kudos for that. They started to learn that with Office, having training, proper tutorial
like tool
videos.
Tips they need to bring up in the operating system. When you do a fresh install or you become a new user on operating system, they should have these little things. Did you know this
the
does this and this does this?
Most people ignore it.
Are they
inconvenience.
Oh, get go out away, of my way. I'm trying away to do something else.
Exactly. Yes. The inconvenience. So the problem is there should be, I don't know how they need to spend money on this to research and see what way can they do this to actually educate people properly, how to use your PC more efficiently and so forth. So that's what it comes down to. So
some nice changes coming in 2H.
Yeah, 22H2. So it's mainly backend stuff that's changing. There's a lot of more compatibility stuff that's fixing as well for all the software and so forth that's coming in. There's the auto HDR, the implementations that are getting better. There's new, I think they're going to have better integration with like Teams and all those type of things as well for corporate type of stuff as well. So it's generally looked upon as it's the service pack one for Windows 11.
So what you're saying is Windows 11 is now ready for use.
Exactly. That's why I tell people it's like, normally when an operating system with Windows comes out, you wait a year, wait for service pack one to come out, then you know most of the problems have been fixed because it's been out, it's been in mass production. All the people have played with it, seen the bugs, fixed the bugs, and there you go. So then it's much, and I presume most corporates will also then swing across now with, especially with 12th gen and all those things.
Yeah.
Which you, again, I recommend strongly. If you've got Intel 12th gen, Windows 11 is a lot better than Windows 10 on running the E cores and the B cores and so forth. And that adds to the previous conversation we had about hardware.
Now, what's really interesting is we were expecting Windows, there was some talk that Windows 10 might be the last iteration of Windows, and then it just became a service delivered over the internet, software as a service model. So Microsoft kind of surprised the market when it announced and released Windows 11, but now they're talking about a more frequent update to the operating system, and we're even seeing speculation now of Windows 12 possibly coming in a year or two's time.
They're learning from the hardware vendors. It's good to actually have a cycle where you say, like Intel had the TikTok cycle, AMD now has their cycles where they prefer to do something every 2 to 3 years and so forth. So it's good to have a target saying, this is our target, execute on the target, where do we move on from there? What can we bring into the new operating system, improve, and all that jazz? So I think that's where I would prefer them to go from, is to see where, from Windows, having a proper structure around it, seeing what improvements they can do, bring it out in a timely manner, and then move on. Whereas now we get these big updates that come out, and then it's so many things have changed, you don't actually know what has changed. And that, I think, it makes it easier also to sell it, kind of, because the same with Mac. Mac does the same thing as well with their operating systems. How many Mac operating system iterations do they do? They also annual. Pretty much an annual, mostly they do every 3 years a big update.
Yeah.
Hardware is pretty much every 3 years also update. Linux does a 3 year cycle as well.
I was going to say, isn't Microsoft kind of falling in line with the Ubuntu release cycle? Yes. Because Ubuntu does a long term release every 3 years that's supported for 5 years or whatever it is into the future. Then you've got the release updates every 6 months, which are kind of like the 1H and 2H releases that Microsoft does now with Windows, which are smaller updates. But then you have the big release every 3 years. Are they kind of falling in line with the Ubuntu approach to software releasing?
It's good to acknowledge when there's something, a better way to do something. So I think they've seen that, saying, okay, there's a better way to do this. And it makes it easier then for your software developers to say, sweet, these are targets that we set. What are our targets? What timely fashion can we do that? So it's good for Microsoft to do this. There's no way around this. I would prefer them to do this because then it's easier for them to actually do hardware changes as it goes as well. So the operating systems might go out of date quicker as well now doing that. But it's also good for the hardware vendors because then it's easier to then say, what is the new low end? What is the new low end? So that stuff can get better quicker.
And from a marketing perspective, do you think it's good to call it the one that's going to come out 2 years from now, Windows 12?
Don't know. That's the problem. That's now Microsoft will have to spend marketing money to find out what is the best way to market. Should they just go Windows 12, 13, 14, which would be a nice naming scheme because like Apple's way was quite nice or arty, where you can say a lion and then they've got these different names. But then some customers come in and say, I don't even know what version of I am in. So having it numerals is a bit easier.
Yeah.
But you can fall in the same type with numerals like with AMD and NVIDIA and so forth, where you've got 3080, 3090, and then you start like you can only do 10 so many times. And then you can just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you 10. Then you start at 1 again.
I think Ubuntu ran into that problem because it got rid all the way to Z, didn't it? Ran out of letters.
So there is a problem with that cycle. Yeah. So I think there's a way where you can, I think they now started with Windows 10, 11, 12. It might be an easy way for them to go to that route and so forth.
Yeah. But with Windows becoming likely to become a service, especially in the corporate environment, does it make sense to be using these names anymore? Shouldn't we just call it Windows 365? I know, if you go into the Microsoft Administration Center at the moment where you buy Office and all that sort of stuff, I see you can now buy Windows as a service.
Yeah.
It's there. It's an option. You can tickets and you pay annually for Windows.
Yes.
So it's there. They've launched Windows as a service. Should we still have these release updates all the time? It used to be called Office 365. It's now called Microsoft 365. Should they not just call it Microsoft Windows 365 and be done with it?
Well, because it's hard, operating systems are linked to hardware. So it's easier then to actually have saying this thing, especially for your OEMs and so forth, it's easier than to market something saying, oh, it comes with a new Windows 11 or new Windows 12 and so forth.
It's a marketing thing.
It's mainly for marketing, and it's also easier for your OEM vendors to say, what certification is the machine already ready for deployment and all that type of stuff? Because I tell people, technically it is already like that. Because I've tried this as an experiment. I have used a Windows 11 key to activate a Windows 10 machine, and it activates. No issue. You can take a Windows 10 key and activate Windows 11. No problem. You can take a Windows 7 key and activate Windows 11.
Oh, wow.
So from Microsoft's point of view, they already see it as it's Windows. The name is purely there just to make it easy to see what version and iteration you have. That's it. So
and help OEMs sell PCs.
To sell PCs and so forth. But I think it's mainly easier for technical guys as well to say, okay, what hardware, what if you make a specific type of software, you can tell the customer saying, it works only with this software.
Mm.
And that software only works with this hardware.
Mm.
So now you don't have to tell the customer what hardware you need. You just tell them, does your machine run Windows 11? Or does your machine run Windows 12? It will work. Done. So that makes it easier for software guys to sell product instead of saying, here's the recommendation. You have to have this Intel processor or this type of thing. You can break it down and say, do you have this operating system? You're good. Don't worry. Mm. If your machine runs this, you're good.
Mm.
If it does run it, either you need to update or buy a new machine.
And it helps sell more PCs. And you can be sure that there were guys who ran into this TPM problem who Windows said very cleverly in that update window. Yes. Your machine is incapable of running Windows 10. We suggest you go and talk to your local computer retailer.
Go buy one.
So and a lot of people would have done that.
Yeah, so you can... There's two ways you can make an argument. People need to use their devices for longer for eco reasons and so forth. But then you can debate the other points like, well, if they make less devices, you make less devices, make them more frequently, you end up to the same point then. So you're not making more waste then. If you just, it's the same with, my biggest point will be for most companies as well, bigger companies and also for hardware.
Mm.
Instead of trying to make one piece of hardware and make 100 million of it, rather make half of that and then bring the update quicker.
Mm.
And we can start seeing, now, I see some militaries also have realized that idea as well.
Mm.
Instead of trying to make either one plane or something like that and trying to keep that plane going for 20, 30, 40 years, and then the plane is so decrepit and so bodged on and it looks like a freaking cyborg now because it's 1918 FUTSAC technology with modern day 2021st technology in it, there becomes problems with that, and it becomes more expensive to try and run old hardware with new stuff. So I think it would be better for the whole industry to, instead of making one laptop and make bazillions of it, make less laptops and have more hardware cycles come in.
But on this Windows as a service thing, I think you're right. It makes sense in the probably more in the consumer market. And I think in the business market, companies are just going to buy Windows as a service.
Yeah, now it's going to go completely
cloud. And you'll just have the latest version.
It's going to be terminal based. It's even when Windows announced Windows 365, the amount of people that signed up was like Windows did not expect that. I'm like, of course they can, because you can now buy, literally you can buy your machine. If you want a quad-core machine with X amount of SSD and so forth, all they need to do is they have to have their laptop, they log into their terminal, and they've got more processing power on their terminal than on the actual machine.
Yeah.
Or you can give them access.
This is Windows as a cloud. Windows service. In the cloud. What do they call that? I've forgotten.
Well, I think it's just called Windows 365.
Windows 365. Okay. So that's delivered. It's kind of going back to the mainframe era where your PC becomes a dumb terminal and everything's delivered over the internet to you or delivered over a network connection to you.
Yeah.
How big do you see Windows 365, if that's what it's called?
Yeah, it's Microsoft 365.
Microsoft 365.
Yeah. I think it's going to become massive.
Mm.
I think... Mainly that's where Azure comes in and so forth, because I think it only supports on Azure. So I think a lot of companies are going to just offload all of those things. We might see some lawyers get involved, because I think Amazon might not be happy about this, because Amazon has a good grip on the whole data center monopoly type of thing. I can't say really monopoly, but they have a good grip on it.
They're the market leader, yeah.
Yeah, they've got a good grip on it. And a lot of people use that where they actually have their own virtual machines that they run and deploy, and then people log into their machines into Azure, and there you go.
Yeah.
So Microsoft is trying to use their own advantage of an operating system. They're using that
lever. Microsoft being anti-competitive.
Well, it's not really. They're not being anti-competitive, because Amazon can do that. Mm. Amazon can do that, but the problem is their operating costs are going to be much higher than Microsoft, because the cost is all internal. Again, they still need to pay for the hardware, which, again, Amazon, you can say, have already paid for their hardware because they have been such a leader.
Mm.
So, again, the one company will always get another reason to say, you cheating, and the other company saying, no, you cheating, and you cheated before me.
They're already fighting.
There's always a throwing a fit there between the companies and so forth. So
the next big antitrust trial is going to involve cloud.
I've got that feeling as well, where that's, especially with Microsoft going this, where you can you pay for the office and you pay for the operating system on one go, and it's with Azure, and you can log in. it's easier for the IT admins then to run it as well, because you can then schedule the updates. You don't have to worry about the client's machine updating and security, because the security is all done in that virtual machine. So there is, I think, a lot of corporate companies are going to switch over to that model because it's going to be much safer, first of all, because less fear of, like, when they lock your machine down and so forth using BitLocker, not BitLocker, encryption and so forth.
Oh, ransomware.
Ransomware and all that type of jazz and so forth becomes less and less problem, because we've seen a lot of companies get hit by ransomware.
Yeah.
Even in South Africa, we've seen a couple of companies get hit. I know in America, it's been a way, way worse. Hospitals and all that stuff. So if they can move to a way where it's dump terminals that all log into a VM, it's much safer for everyone.
So where does Windows go in the long term? I'm quite interested in the way Microsoft, which just 15 years ago, Steve Ballmer called the license that governs Linux, the GPL, a cancer on the industry. Now Linux is integrated into Windows. What's it called? The Linux Windows subsystem for Linux, I think it's called.
Yeah.
So they love Linux now. They bought GitHub. They they genuinely seem to like open source. Is this a ruse? Is Microsoft has Microsoft really changed, or is this a case of what did they call it? Embrace, extend, extinguish.
Well, basically, it's more of acceptance. There is a better way to do it. Our software device, I think it's more they just accept it. Linux is better in certain fields.
And it's no longer, they no longer see it as a threat. The GPL is no longer going to destroy
the problem
them.
Is, it's like, they came from this point of view of very walled garden look.
We have to protect Windows at all costs.
Windows is this fragile little baby, and it's our baby, which it is, incidentally. Ballmer was there in the early days, so it is his baby.
Yeah.
It's Gates' baby. It's their baby. They grew it up, and they made it the monster it is now.
But actually, it didn't need protecting because it was so strong.
But the problem is, it's their child. Yeah. You will always want to protect your child.
Yeah.
That's how they feel about that. They fought blood, sweat, and tears to make
Windows.
So
they did.
That's now, I thought you need to remember, they're coming from a very biased point of view. So that's where they come from there. So Windows can go multiple areas. I think they're going to start more fluid in terms of accepting stuff coming in. That's why they bought GitHub as well, to ensure, because I think Microsoft, and there was a lot of developers, I think internally, that feared that someone would buy GitHub and destroy it. So then a lot of people feared, Microsoft will do that. But so far, GitHub is still there. Microsoft hasn't really damaged it per se. They've pretty much left it as is. Because again, they will benefit from GitHub as well. Because once they go the Linux route, they can get more developers come in, see code, develop code on this. It's more transparent and so forth. So I think it's more of accepting what it is, seeing what is improvement, rather than trying fighting the improvement, accept it and say, this is a better way to do it. Let's incorporate it. Our devs prefer Linux. That's why they have the subsystem built into Linux, because there's certain things that Linux is just better. Even with hardware, there's even most hardware runs actually better on Linux than on Windows, especially like AMD Threadripper machines and so forth. Linux runs more cores better than Intel, better than Microsoft. So that's also one area where I would say Microsoft can see and learn from that and say, incorporate all the good parts of Linux into it. They'll still keep Microsoft as is and so forth, because there's a lot of advantages with Microsoft operating system as it. It's pretty bulletproof. You can't use it. You will struggle to break Windows. You have go out of your way to break it. Linux, you can look at the funny videos of Linus that's trying to build or try and install Linux on his own machine, and then he deleted the operating system and stupid stuff like that and so forth. Windows, it's difficult to do that. Even if you do go in and delete stuff like that, Windows just goes, okay, I'll fix myself now quickly. Because because it's been broken so many times, it's like a human body where it's built up an immune system around being broken like that. Whereas Linux, it's a very fragile thing. Same as with Mac as well.
Yeah.
Mac, if you break a couple of things, the whole thing just falls in one another and it's dead. I have had machines in with Windows where Windows cannot even repair the thing, and the Windows is so broken, the machine is so slow, but it still works.
Still boots up.
like control panel doesn't work. Certain
it's
subsystems,
like some sort of Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, the audio system subsystem for Windows can't work, but the machine still boots and it still goes in. You can still open Word and it still goes, even though some stuff are completely broken.
It might be riddled with viruses and all the rest of it.
Well, it's like, I was amazed. We had a couple of clients come in a couple of weeks ago with Windows 10, where it's like completely like half of the operating system is basically FUBAR.
Mm.
And it still worked. With Linux, my brother's also done where he fixed the machine stuff with Linux. You do a couple of things and it breaks. Nah, it's gone. You have to reload Linux. And because that's like, oh, no, you should have done backups. But I should never trust the operating system completely. Mm. So it's like...
So the borrowing aspects of Linux, do you think Windows is going to become more Linux-like going forward?
In the back end, yes.
In the back end.
Yeah, not the front end. The front end is going to still be Windows as is.
It'll still be a Microsoft kernel. It's never going to be a Linux kernel.
Yeah, no, they're going to just incorporate. They're going to just, again, that's what makes it liquid, is you can just absorb it and then just use what's all the good parts and then all the bad parts you don't even look at. Mm. So I think it would behoove Microsoft to do that as well.
Is Windows a natural monopoly? Do you think that no matter what Microsoft does, they're going to...
Gates did that properly. Yeah. So, again, kudos and car. Again, he did some stuff which you can frown upon, but it's also, he did it aggressively and nobody really came up to compete with him.
Mm.
Apple didn't really come up to the party to compete because Apple was hardware vendor. They didn't want to sell the operating system to Dell HP.
Mm.
And you can say, oh, but they stopped other companies. It's like, what other companies were around, really?
Well, there was IBM, which they were co-developing OS 2 with.
Yes. So you can we can say he was a bit of an ass.
He was.
That's honest. But again, it's like, but IBM should have also been a bit more awake.
Mm.
Because again, it's like, you've now got this company that's in its infancy.
Yeah.
Somehow you just like got this guy to do. I'm like, didn't you guys like internally make your own operating system or look at it? It's like.
He pulled the rug from under IBM.
Yes, well, again, it's like he saw opportunity saying, if I just link this to IBM as well.
He was ruthless.
Yeah. Again, smart on his point of view, because if he didn't do it, he would not be the man he is now. Yeah. He would not be as wealthy.
Mm.
So again, he's been smart.
Mm.
So again, at those time periods, it was ruthless. It's not as if IBM was this. There's
a good reason they got into trouble with the antitrust authorities.
Yeah, again, it's not as if IBM wasn't a bad person as well.
No.
A lot of people forget IBM was out. But
they were a big monolithic.
Exactly. Like, so that's why I think
IBM just assumed that Microsoft would fall into line. Yes,
I think because they thought our hammer is, we'll just beat you to death, basically. And exactly. I think Gates managed that big intelligently, that he got him wormed himself out of that and so forth.
They were developing Windows NT without IBM's knowledge.
Yes.
That was underhanded.
That's like...
But smart.
It's I can... Kudos where kudos goes. Mm. It's like, I think that was the better option to do.
Yeah.
Again, it was the legal reasons. You can say, no, you shouldn't have done that.
But you have to ask, how invested were they really with the OS 2 project?
Exactly.
They were hedging their bets in this way.
Exactly. So he also had to be careful, because if they just dropped him, he would be screwed.
Mm.
So again, always have a backup plan. And that was his backup plan, even though it was a bit more on the legal gray side. But
and then Windows has dominated ever since.
Yeah. And then again... Intelligently.
Yeah.
He made sure, again, he walked the line perfectly well between his OEM vendors. Again, he didn't discriminate between OEM vendors. Everyone got help.
Yeah.
There's the reason why Microsoft, because Bill Gates also pushed a lot, and he pushed his engineers hard, especially software engineers. He whipped them quite hard sometimes to get stuff done, get stuff fixed, get the hardware done, and so forth. Where Linux and all those things didn't have that money behind it to compete with Windows there. So, yes, you can say, yes, it could have competed, but it didn't have the same UI. It didn't have all those other nice features that you could use.
What's ironic about all of this, though, of course, is, I mean, Linux has been around all these years, and every year, you don't hear it so much anymore, but every year people would say, this is going to be the year of Linux on the desktop. It's going to take over. It's finally happening, and it never does.
Yeah.
But Linux won everywhere else, right? They won on the phone. Android runs Linux. They won on the server. Most web servers in the world are running on Linux.
Everything
runs Linux except desktop.
Apple, even Apple, so as Linux.
It's based on Unix originally. Exactly.
Yeah, it's
same basic underpinnings. So Windows won on the desktop, but lost everywhere else. Does that matter? Probably not, I would argue.
Not really. I think it hurts Windows, because Windows had a couple of opportunities, especially with mobile and so forth, to actually be truly innovative before everyone else.
Mm.
So I think it was just, again, management.
Windows Phone or Windows Mobile with the tiles was actually quite a nice OS.
Yes, there was. You see, it was good planning, poor execution.
Yeah.
That's the main problem.
And coming to market a bit late.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Mm. Some of the stuff came way too early. Some of it came too way late.
They were an early pioneer, in fact, in mobile. Remember the Compaq iPack pen-based.
Yeah, or PDAs.
That was before HP, the iPhone.
Way before. Mm. So I tell people, it's like, it all comes down to execution at the right moment.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
which is if what you're Steve lucky, Jobs did brilliantly with the iPhone.
That's why he's good at stealing other people's ideas. And there's nothing wrong with it.
But the iPhone was the right product at the right time.
Yes. Even though
he knew it.
He knew it, and it's like you could see he was a good visionary. Mm. You could see different people's ideas put into a package.
Yeah.
So Microsoft can do that. The problem is with Microsoft sometimes is there's too many people. And some of the head people are too stuck in a rut with certain
things.
And
there wasn't a visionary leader at the top who could direct.
Yeah, well, again, most of the companies now, you can't say that, like, Lisa Su's isn't a visionary or something like that. Mm. That type of thing is gone. Because the problem is Apple has and will always be a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the company works. So that if the leader is weak, the whole company is weak.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Apple's always been. Yeah. If the leader goes, the whole company crumbles if there's not a proper leader to follow it properly.
Mm.
So you can see now Apple's also gone into more of a plateau a bit.
Mm.
Because, again, they don't have as much of a visionary, but they've got a person that's still decent at running the company.
Yeah.
So I think if they get another visionary in there that can really take all the money that Apple's using and saying, should we need to put in all these different segments, then I think Apple can actually go even higher than they are now.
Yeah.
But they'll need the right person employed to do that,
mm.
which they don't have now.
But let's talk about potential threats to Windows on the desktop. It's hegemony on the desktop.
Yeah.
Chrome OS is a very interesting product. It's basic. It needs an internet connection most of the time. It doesn't run advanced applications, so it's probably not going to get a foothold in a market that requires Excel or apps like that, although you can still run Excel on the web.
Yes.
Do you think Google poses a threat to Microsoft in the longer term on the desktop?
I think what's going to happen with Windows is there's going to be multiple fronts of attack against it now coming.
Mm.
Hence why I think they've also now changed the scheduling how they do Windows.
Okay.
Because Linux is now becoming more ubiquitous and it becomes easier to deploy in different systems. We can now see that with Valve, with its consoles. Again, Sony's operating system is also Linux-based and so forth. So I can see that coming where it's going to be easier for multiple companies to just take Linux as is, because Linux as is now getting really good.
Mm.
We can look at Pop OS. Pop OS is fairly decent.
It's a great OS, that, yeah.
So it's now becoming easier where, again, the foundations are there. You can literally just take it, skin it, push it out. You can already see, there's a bunch of YouTube channels that literally just go through all the different versions of skinned versions of Linux and all iterations of that. So I think that becomes easier and easier to do. So you'll see more and more companies bringing out their own operating systems for specific niche for their specific hardware. So there we can see Valve coming in as well with their focus and so forth. The advantage with Windows, with what Windows has with Windows mainly, is still with OEMs.
Mm-hmm.
So unless one of the OEM vendors breaks and says, we're going to go a bit more hardcore in OS or with Linux operating systems and so forth,
right,
then we might see Microsoft becoming a bit more angry. But now it's still just Google.
Mm.
Google doesn't have a good history with proper execution with certain products.
And they very easily can projects that aren't working.
So that's the problem. They've got a good idea, but then the execution falters and then the product dies.
Yes.
Or just gets abandoned.
Many times.
Which Google, all software eventually gets abandoned sometime.
The biggest, worst example of Google doing this is in messaging.
Oh, well, it's what's it? Which one?
GChat, Google Chat. Chat,
and then Hello.
Hangouts.
Hangouts. That's the one. It's also.
There's a whole list of them. Litany of stuff they've abandoned.
Google has that. So I think at the moment they look at that. Again, the hardware that it's combo to as well is a bit of a problem for me, because it's like the Google operating system is Celeron type of stuff and
basic
so forth.
Stuff,
it's it's pretty crap stuff. It's once it gets to, you can, I see now i5s and so forth, but the problem is still, what Linux is going to face is, especially with peripherals and all those jazz.
Yeah.
Plug-in, can it work? Yes or no? No. So that's why I tell people, if you do it hardware device, like Apple has done. Mm. So I would say, if you do take a Linux type of thing you're trying to incorporate, you need to be more Apple-like, where you're going to start saying, sweet, it only works with these things and the people know the ecosystem.
Yeah.
That's why Valve can get away with it. with the Steam Deck and so forth.
Yeah.
Because they've made it clear, this is what it does. It's a portable niche gaming console. That's it. It's not a PC. We're not trying to sell this as a PC. You can use it as a PC, they say. But then that's not the main selling point. So I think when you make a hardware dedicated thing like that, I think those will jump out more into other areas. So I think Windows might get to a point where they might start charging even less for the operating system. My problem is that the operating system is too bulky to go for those type of systems. So unless Windows, which I would implore them to do, is to have a, like, get more developers behind Windows and start saying, once we have this annual or scheduled release of Windows, we need to start making different kernels, saying this operating system, this breakaway version is better at doing this. This operating system is better doing it that. Because you cannot make one operating system do everything.
Mm.
That's Windows has been trying that for a very long time and it's failed pretty much.
They've got something called Windows SE coming up. Windows 11 SE coming up. That's supposedly going to be the competitor to Chrome OS.
Yes. So Windows, the problem is with those operating systems, they've always been a bit more hamstrung. It's like you can understand where they're coming from, but I think they need to it's a complete overhaul of an operating system you need to do.
Mm.
Like literally subsystems need to be removed. Hopefully that's what SE will become if they actually remove proper subsystems from Windows and say treat all these other legacy stuff. We don't need all this legacy support, remove that, make the operating system smaller. But problem is it will never be as good as Linux. Because Linux is much more hardcore coded to that. So unless they take that literally from Linux and just say treat it's the Linux skin of Windows, then you can do that. But the attempts that they've done so many multiple attempts and they've always failed, they need to really do something proper to impress me. Because they've failed so many times.
Mm. Mm.
So
interesting. So we're gonna talk in episode 3 all about Linux. And it's kind of the flip side of this episode, isn't it? Because we're gonna be talking a lot about Microsoft in our Linux discussion as well. And I think there's a lot to explore there. We could continue talking about Windows all afternoon, but I think we probably need to call it at some point, and this is probably a good point to call it. We've covered the main stuff around Windows, and it's quite an exciting time to be a Windows user actually. I think the operating system had become a bit dull. And I'm actually quite pleased that they're releasing iterations again so frequently. I think
competition is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
When Microsoft feels that there is now competition, competition breeds innovation.
Absolutely. So we're going to, even if you're not a Linux user, do tune in into our next show, because it is going to be a fascinating discussion. And I'm sure all of our viewers who are computer enthusiasts have played with some Linux distributions along the line. I still play with them from time to time. And Pop! OS, I must say, I've played with quite recently and I'm quite impressed with it. So we're going to talk about all of that, unpack it. What is the importance of Linux? What distros should we be using in 2022?
Yes. No,
I'm also going to need to do a bit of research before this episode. And it's probably going to be the episode where we get the most user feedback, I suspect, because the Linux community is very vocal.
Oh, yes. Apparently they are keyboard warriors.
So looking forward to that discussion. I think that's it for the show. As always, if you don't subscribe to us yet, or if you've missed any previous episodes, they're all available on Tech Central. Subscribe to our daily newsletter at techcentral.co.za and you will get all our latest tech shows, all the latest tech news from South Africa and the world through that newsletter. If you want to subscribe directly, just go to youtube.com/techcentral or search Everything PC on any of the major podcasting platforms and you'll find the podcast there. Hit that subscribe button and you'll get a notification every time we publish a new episode. This show is brought to you by HP and Microsoft. We look forward to hosting HP and Microsoft representatives at the end of the season. We're going to talk about a lot of these issues. We might even touch on Linux with our Microsoft host. Why not? So we look forward to that discussion as well. Thanks for joining us from Gerard and myself. Until next week, take care. Cheers.